Greetings and welcome to the second episode of Dragons and Starships. I'm CJ McKee, your ominous and fearless leader. Okay, well, maybe not fearless.
And I'm Angus Day, your demented science fiction consumer and creator.
Would that be ominous or homonym? I can't remember. I always get those two confused.
Ominous.
Ominous, okay.
Impending doom.
My own, probably. The world, not so much. Today we got some more info to talk about for fantasy and science fiction. We'll start things off with some in-the-news information about one of them being some new movies coming up. It's going to be a very exciting year for movies. Definitely got to get off my buttocks and head on out to see some of these movies in the theaters.
Where you can remain on your buttocks for an hour and a half to 2 hours and consume the movie.
Yeah, that too. I might, my sciatica might not appreciate that, but, you know, we all have to suffer for our entertainment, right?
Yep.
Let's see, we've got Godzilla 2014 coming out May 16th, 2014. I've already seen both of the trailers, and got to tell you, as a longtime Godzilla fan, even in the original ones and even the cheesy ones with Godzilla's baby and everything, I've been an avid fan and a longtime viewer, even collecting, going so far as to collect comic books and write my own little short stories about it. So I'm looking forward to it based on what I've seen in the trailer. It looks like it's got a kind of a real feel to it. I mean, it looks like what would actually happen as far as the way they would try to take him down and the impact that he has on the world around him. So I'm definitely looking forward to it. How about you?
Yeah, you had me watch the trailer, and I'm pleasantly surprised with where it's going. I mean, I believe both of us saw the Matthew Broderick remake, a reboot attempt, and it kind of wallowed. I think this one will actually make it, or it might be ripe for gaining more Godzilla fans.
Yeah, I have to agree. Although I did appreciate the take and direction they went with the Godzilla with Matthew Broderick, kind of veering off from the typical and the original, as to whether they kind of should have called it Godzilla, that's another story. I mean, to me, it's the same as calling the new Star Trek movies Star Trek, but that's a whole other discussion.
Yeah, they've kind of gotten into rebooting success stories and trying to make alternative lines out of them. You can see that with the Tom Clancy stuff too.
Yeah, definitely. So I'm looking forward to it. I have a feeling that they, acting notwithstanding, of course, it's going to be very entertaining, and it's going to be nice to see the original look of Godzilla with more of the feel of the sheer size and magnitude of his, like I said, his impact on the world, as well as how they deal with it in a more realistic nature.
Well, yeah, and it gives Bryan Cranston another vehicle after Malcolm in the Middle and Breaking Bad, so it can't be all bad.
Let's hope so.
On the line of movies, we've got two coming out real close together here. The next one that caught my attention was Divergent. It's based on a book trilogy. The basic premise is in a futuristic dystopia society, people coming of age take a chemical-induced test to help determine what their profession, what their role in society is going to be. And Divergent refers to those who the test doesn't work on. They can do anything they put their minds to, and society doesn't like that. You can imagine what follows. So I have great hopes for this first one coming out. I've heard good things about the first and second books, not so good things about the third book, which is Allegiant. It's Divergent, Insurgent, and Allegiant, I think. So we'll see how they do with it in film form. And then April 4th, Captain America, Winter Soldier, hits the theaters.
That looks like it's going to rock.
And I've recently read some more stuff about it. I wasn't really familiar with Captain America growing up other than the name. And occasionally they would make a made-for-TV series pilot or something that would try and get it moving. But in the Captain America lore, his friend Bucky Barnes dies in the first Captain America, falls off the train.
Right.
And it may be just a hoax, but we'll see something of Bucky Barnes in the future.
Well, it should take a natural progression like that. I mean, Captain America without Bucky in it just isn't quite the same. You know, regardless of how they bring him back and how he interacts with the movie version of Captain America.
There also seems to be some debate right now up to Chris, the guy who plays Captain America, signed on for 6 films, and I guess there's supposedly 8 or 9 in the series. So there may be a change coming up.
Well, wow, I had no idea that they actually have looked that far out for Captain America. Chris Evans has definitely pulled off the character. If anything, I feel like he's got the role down of the kind of American Boy Scout type, you know. But I hope he gets a little darker, you know, sometime down the road.
I could see it coming in this movie.
Just
from the trailer. I think he has to make some major life decisions in this one beyond what he's already made. So.
Yeah, I can see that definitely. I mean, like I said, it's been... Did you ever see the original Captain American TV series?
No, I did see a pilot, I thought, with... I'm trying to think of that guy's name. Christopher Lloyd played the villain in it.
Oh, okay.
Back into the 70s.
It was 70s, 80s. Yep. And it was just like the Spider-Man version of the series back then. It was definitely, and I use the term loosely, an attempt at creating the comic book into a TV series.
Oh, yeah. Well, and they definitely had the purse strings drawn tight on it. But I don't think the technology of the time was capable of doing much more, even though it was Star Wars time.
I think everybody tried to jump on the bandwagon for that too. So,
yeah.
It was funny when you were talking about Divergent. The first thing that came to mind, the description you were giving was, sounds like corporate America.
Yeah. Well, take your SAT in a liquid vial and see how things turn out for you.
Yeah, I think I did. So now I'm kind of worried. So
that wasn't the SAT. That was something else.
Yeah. Things got a little hazy. I don't know what happened there.
That was chasing down the mushrooms, wasn't it, CJ?
We don't talk about that. hold on 1 second.
All right.
Oh, that was good. Okay. Just excuse me. A little break there. Okay. Ooh, everything's kind of green. Okay. Moving along, there's the music for our next segment. One of the things that I think that, and I believe a lot of fantasy and science fiction fans can kind of attest to, and you hear stories all the time from Star Trek fans about how that got them into engineering, and you see a lot of things that were created from Star Trek. You know, you see all these toys they had, and even back then I wanted to make my own toys, basically, communicators, phasers, whatever. I started thinking about it earlier today, actually, and I was, what kind of impact these movies and television and even books, for that matter, have had on our lives. And for me personally, both fantasy and science fiction, fantasy in kind of a roundabout way, indirect way, actually got me interested to learning more about my Celtic heritage. Because when I started reading about how fairies and elves and other mythological creatures were real in mythology, a lot of it pointed to, I mean, granted, there's a lot of cultures that have the same beliefs, but it really got me on the path to learning more about my Celtic heritage. And it was absolutely fascinating. The more I learned, the more I just wanted to inhale the information and learn even more. the mythology is so entwined within the culture that I was amazed at how many people to this day still maintain that belief and concern about the nasty little fairies in the woods. And it was amazing to me that there was so much more to it. And I think that's indirectly, like I said, it got me learning more about my own Celtic heritage, my own Scottish heritage, realized the things I had seen and read about, not only in fiction, but in other books, including world history, was, again, so much a part of my ancestry. And just like Star Trek and other science fiction, including Godzilla, which got me more into dragons as well. And then we had Star Trek, we had Star Wars, we had all these other science fiction influences, Ray Bradbury, all of this influx of information, people telling me, that stuff's impossible. That's why they call it science fiction. It's impossible. Can't happen. And then you look at all the things we've got now, and it's like, you people were wrong. And it got me into technology more and more. As time went by, and they started creating more and more things that started to mimic or even match things that I saw on Star Trek, it really started me on the path of IT and technology and that world.
Yeah, and same here. I feel that both genres have helped me form my worldview. Fantasy later on, but primarily starting with science fiction, because when I grew up, or where I grew up, fantasy wasn't so much tolerated as science fiction would be, but I ran into the same mindset you just said of, yeah, that can't happen. That'll never happen. It's not happening right now, so that means it can't. And people just have, I think, migrated their minds from that point of, well, these are the laws, and they shall not be violated, to, oh, well, this is the condition as we understand it now, and sometime in the future, we might figure out a way around it. So I'm still waiting on that for a bunch of things, but they've surpassed what they thought were laws back when I was growing up on a lot of things. Nanotechnology is one. We're getting there, and we're taking measured steps to get there too, which is kind of something that science fiction books would maybe get a little hand wavy at times in the past, where all of a sudden there's an inciting incident that unfolds all technology for us. Well, yeah, that may still be fantasy. As far as my Celtic heritage, I've only actually started paying attention to that much in the last several years, and especially the lore side of it.
Well, it's interesting to note that, have you ever read The Mabinogion?
Yes, elements of it I have.
To me, it's such an old story, but yet it's one of the early fantasy novels, if you will, but yet it was, so much part of the Celtic heritage. And if people don't know what that is, the Mabinogion is a ancient Welsh, basically, set of stories, a collection of short stories, if you will, based on mythological characters. And it's a pretty easy read if it's been translated properly. The Welsh one's not so easy to read. There's also the Tane of Cuchulainn. That's another one. That's an Irish one. So it just, again, as I learned more, and obviously as you've learned as well, we see a lot of interesting storylines that talk about things that the more modern stories also write about, but obviously not in the same context or vein. But I think a lot of the elements from that have come forward, whether it's, again, directly or indirectly.
I agree. I think they've gotten trampled on by what people considered mainstream thought, whether it was in fantasy, Celtic heritage, or science versus science fiction. Celtic heritage kind of got trampled pretty good by, let's call it Christianity. But, there were just periods of intolerance and you won't go anywhere if you believe this and if you publicly state it. So I see now that there's opportunity for more tolerance, more acceptance, or just let's not talk about it, let's talk about other things, which actually is a step forward. It's actually continuing the conversation and agreeing not to torture each other.
So, well, we all find ways to torture each other.
Yes, there is that.
And there's some people that like the torture, but we won't go there. Anyway, so I think the ultimate question to this is, both fantasy and science fiction, but is it possible? Is it out there? Can it be done? But do you believe in magic?
Well, magic could be technology beyond the scope of the people who are seeing it.
Well said. I think that it's a little bit of both. There's definitely no doubt to me that when you see even something simple, even though it can be explained scientifically, something that's natural and common still seems magical, even if you can explain the scientific or the physics of it. You know, there's still a magic in it. What you said is spot on. If it's technological and people don't know that it's technological or know how it's done, it's magic.
And I think what's crucial in that viewpoint, too, is from the observer, that they not automatically dismiss something they don't understand. But, you know, if it's something that appeals to them, they seek somehow to make it reality.
Absolutely. My concern is scientists discovering how real magic works. I think we're all screwed by that time.
Yeah, I wouldn't hold my breath on that one.
I think that's a little ways out.
Hey, well, should we move on to the next topic? What books would you like to see made into movies or television series? Would you like to go ahead and start out with ones that you have in mind?
One of the ones I've been wanting to see, and part of it stems from, so this is one reboot I wouldn't mind seeing. We were talking earlier about reboots of Godzilla and all these other movies that they keep rehashing. Sometimes it's a hit, sometimes it's a miss. Most of the time it's a miss. But given the fact that I just recently saw Gravity, the way they did Gravity was absolutely fantastic. It was from the point of view of the two main characters, and you only heard voices over radio from the other characters, and they maintained the focus on those two throughout the entire movie. And it was just, to me, it was very well done. Very, very, very intense. What I'd like to see is more well-done style of movies that capture the essence of what the book is. We've talked before about, and I know there's a lot of diehard Tolkien fans out there that had issues with the Lord of the Rings movies and the Hobbit. And I can understand that. But I think they captured the world very, very well. There's no doubt in my mind whatsoever that they captured it. And it had the feel, it had the storyline down pretty well. So as long as they maintain that, I would like to see one of my earliest books that I ever read, at least that I can remember with my limited brain capacity, Martian Chronicles.
Oh, yeah.
Like I said, limited brain capacity here. Martian Chronicles was created into a miniseries in the 70s.
Rock Hudson and Darren McGavin. And
yes, and it was very poorly done.
Oh, yeah.
It was no slam to the actors. They worked with what they had, and the writing could have been better. They changed some seriously integral things. You know, somebody had obviously good intentions, but it didn't work out. I would love to see that book made into a epic, either at least a movie, one movie maybe, mm-hmm. with the multiple stories, or recreate the miniseries again for television. But just, you know, do a much better job. It's been one of my all-time favorites. Even though it's already been done, I would still like to see it made into a movie again, currently, the way our technology is now. The second one would be The Dragon Riders of Pern.
Oh, there you go. I was waiting for that one.
I absolutely love that series of books. Anne McCaffrey was just amazing. And I learned a lot from reading her books, and I just... it made me want to write more, especially about dragons, of course.
I think they're at a point now where they could pull that off and it not turn into a claymation stop action horror, I wish I had that time I watched it back kind of thing.
Yeah. Give me back my hour. What happened?
Well, they came pretty close with, what was that, made for sci-fi miniseries or two-part movie, Dinotopia.
Oh, yes.
Where they actually had, you know, pterodactyl riders, dragon
yes.
riders. Yeah, okay.
Yeah, that was pretty good. I enjoyed that.
I think they did an excellent job of that. And that was just a, you know, a TV studio budget making one into a film. If you got one of the big movie company trifectas on the case, I'm sure they would come up with something really spectacular for Dragon Riders of Pern.
I think doing, especially the way they did Game of Thrones, as well as Walking Dead, you know, Walking Dead's from the original comic book series, as well as Game of Thrones was from books, book series. As many books as there are in the Dragon Rider series, it would be easy to create a series out of that. If they did it as they did with the HBO series and or Walking Dead, then it would be fantastic. I would definitely buy that set.
Yeah, I'd be up for going to see something like that. I mean, I'd even pay big theater price.
Oh, absolutely. Even if they squished it down into a couple hours or 2.5, 3 hours, whatever, yeah, I would definitely pay to go see that.
Oh, yeah. I think what we've seen over the last, well, when was Blade Runner? 1980?
It was 80, I want to say 84, 85, something like that.
Okay. Well, since then, we've seen the authors, just all of his work just milked and made into any film that could come. I mean, they just kept going back to Philip K. Dick, taking another short story or work and making it into a film, whether it succeeded or not. I'm ready to see some other authors have their works up. I'm not sure if the public is actually ever aware of how many of Philip K. Dick's stories made it into film, but they made it in after he, you know, just after he died. It's like his estate must have just auctioned each one off.
Oh, yeah.
So you have Blade Runner, which is Do Androids Dream of Electric Sheep? You have Minority Report, Paycheck, Screamers, The Adjustment Bureau, Total Recall, two versions of that one. Oh, Imposter was another one. That was with Gary Sinise and the guy from Taxi.
Oh.
Or not Taxi, yeah.
No, I know who you mean.
Monk.
Yeah, Monk. God, I can't think of his name off the top of my head. But yeah, the thing I don't understand in what I've discovered is Hollywood is either not wanting to take all of these fantastic stories, and again, it could be novels, it could be comic books, just a wide range of things, and especially with all the independent authors out there now, there are tons of material to work with, and some of it's some really good original work. Tony Shalhoub, is that who you're thinking of?
Yeah, that was him.
Yeah.
And it's just, so what gets me is, yeah, his stuff was good, and times the screenwriters did some good things with it, even though they twisted his stuff kind of, maybe that's because he was deceased and his estate was able to sell all the rights and not have any say in it anymore. I really want to see Hollywood tackle some stuff that was classic science fiction. Like, we talked last episode about Foundation by Isaac Asimov, and I would like to see that series made into a mini-series or a series of movies. And I think we're at a point now where they could actually do some good things with that. I hear that there's going to be Arthur C. Clarke's Rendezvous with Rama is supposed to make it into film, but looks like the dates keep getting pushed back. I don't know. Maybe it's this fall on the Sci-Fi Channel. And then Joe Haldeman with his 1970 Forever War, which he sold the rights to it three different times to to people, and they've gotten into the process of starting to do something with it, and then just hog the rights, you know, for a decade or two because they couldn't really put it on their front burner. I would like to see those things make it.
Yeah, maybe if they drop some of these remakes, they'd have time to do the good stuff.
Yeah, and it's, I think it's what we talked about last week about publishing and the movie industry. It's like they keep going back for something that's tried to try and keep the economy of the industry going forward. Another really big science fiction author who's published a ton of work, he used to be an editor, I think, for Asimov magazine, Ben Bova.
Oh, yes.
And taking on what he put into the Tour of the Solar System series would keep Hollywood going for a decade if they made it into movies.
Well, and that's the thing. I mean, why not look to authors who have a good track record of a series of books that were consistently on the bestseller list or that did very well? You know, that were consistently good, you know, and obviously he's got a following, you know, so it's not like he wouldn't already have a built-in audience.
That's right. And the way he wrote some of his stuff, there's a few things that would need to be tweaked, but it's really standing the test of time, whereas some science fiction we've had bounce because they tied it too close to our timeline, and things have changed, and now it's an alternative universe instead of, you know, like Nation Lines or things of that nature. The way Ben Bova attacked science, and to some extent the way Joe Haldeman went about his science and his science fiction, none of it's disproven. Joe Haldeman's Forever War has been out since 1970, so talking 44 years of standing the test of time.
Yeah, that's quite a record.
Yeah.
I mean, even you look at other authors, and unfortunately Ray Bradbury passed away recently, but he kept writing and writing and writing, and he was a fantastic speaker. I had the good fortune of seeing one of his appearances, and yeah, I never understood why they didn't take more of his works and turn it into movies, or whether it be television or the big screen. Because, again, all the works are there. They're original. They're fantastic. They did do Something Wicked This Way Comes, but, again, it fell short.
That one was a Disney movie, wasn't it?
Yes, it was. And, of course, Disney-fied. So.
Oh, yeah, I do remember that now.
Yeah, we're not going to get into to Disney speak at all. So I'm not gonna.
It's a black hole.
It's a black hole. A very dark black hole with a rat in the middle of it. So,
well, you brought up the Martian Chronicles before. I love Ray Bradbury's work. I loved reading his stuff, but that was an example of where science got away from him, if you know what I mean.
Oh, there's no doubt that he didn't try to make it to, for lack of a better term, believable. I always look at things as, you know, is it entertaining? Does it, you know, make you want to read more? Can you visualize the world, you know, whether it's real or not?
Well, and that's where the Martian Chronicles, I do love that book, and I'll tell you why. It's because of Ray Bradbury's prose, just the way he wrote stuff. His descriptive writing just made it.
Yeah, just there was something that whenever I'm reading a book, there's a difference between how I get involved with the characters and how I get involved in the story, overall story. And he got me involved in the overall story in such a way that, you know, real or not, you know, science, politically correct science, whatever you want to call it, it's sucked me in. And it was one of those things where, man, I wish this was real. I wish these people were real, these Martians. And he built such an incredible world out of that.
These Martians with their golden beams.
Yep. And their guns that shot little bees out at everybody.
There you go.
There was definitely a fantasy about
that. If you compare that to some of our contemporary works that are out there where people are writing stuff, they're writing books where they're drawing comparisons to what's on TV that night. And
yeah.
It's like, oh, you just dated this thing. This thing will be good for about a month. and you need to, well, I don't know. I don't want to be all judgy about it, but it's there's a definite world, there's a chasm between the quality of that kind of writing and the quality of what's out there today. And I still don't think, going back to what we're talking about with movies and television series, I still don't think Hollywood and the film industry and the people that make our media visual consumptive have utilized all that was there, all that's been stored up over the century that this kind of entertainment's really been out there.
I think people have lost touch with that somehow.
I believe you're right.
I don't know where the exact moment in time, if there is such a thing, where they switch from reading a really good book, you know, something that really gets your imagination going, gets the mental juices flowing. And I think it's different for everybody just because, you know, there's people that like mysteries, there's people that like drama, there's people that like erotic novels, there's all these different tastes, and I think everybody kind of has their own take on what they like prefer to read. But I think to its essence, though, it's the reading part that really shows, I don't know, more of the, I hate to put it this way, but intelligence level. So somewhere along the lines, that got switched from reading to watching the Kardashians. And if they put the Kardashians in the new Martian Chronicles, I will go postal somewhere. Probably the movie, probably the studio itself.
Yeah, I agree with you. I mean, but I can see the motion picture studios doing that because what did they do? They remade Princess of Mars with an ex-stripper. See, I'm trying to remember what her name was, but it was her and, I'm lost. Before Disney made John Carter.
Tracy Lords.
Tracy Lords, yeah.
That's who you're thinking of. Yeah, the ex-porn star. Well,
and it's whatever they can do to bring him into the theater, you know. She did a good job. I did see the movie, but
I do have to give her some kudos. She managed to break out of that industry and become a legitimate actress. You know, I wouldn't say the greatest actress, but she does a pretty good job. She pulled things off, so. And once again, we move on here. I noticed that you've done quite a few reviews on books lately, and tell me about the most recent one that you just reviewed.
Well, the one I just reviewed today is The Moran. Earlier in the week, I reviewed a novella that was, I can't determine if it was supposed to be the prequel or the sequel to The Moran, but let's start off with that. Into Tulare Space was a sci-fi novella written by Christy Mears, and it involves Earth entering the Interstellar Trade Alliance. They're trying to make contact with this planet they've only heard of from the other races in the Alliance, and the people on the planet are Tulare. They look like humans, but they're really not, at least not on their developmental level. Into Tulare Space is two short stories combined into a novella that have two different perspectives. One perspective from the Earth ambassador and his wife trying to make first contact with Tulare, thinking they're talking to the person in charge. The second one is from the viewpoint of the supreme ruler of Tulare, the Sural, who has gone undercover as a farmer in that province where the Earth people are making contact with one of his provincial leaders, and he's trying to figure out what his subordinate leader is playing at before he reveals himself. It really sets the start of Earth's interactions with this planet, Tulare. The Moran is almost, it's a science fiction romance. Take the king and I, place it on another world with a supposedly backward civilization, and see what develops when the tutor of the civilized culture tries to teach the heir to the throne and falls in love with the actual ruler. So there's that, but then there's a lot of biological and mental portions of that book that make it science fiction, and it's very well done. The editing's excellent. So there's Into Tellari Space, The Moran, and then there's a third book in that bunch that's called The Daughters of Sorelia. And that'll be out in May, I believe. It's out right now, but it's under rewrite. And apparently they're redoing the last third of the book. So it's probably better to just wait until May and get it then, because it'll be under a different ISBN number. I've really enjoyed those books. Christy Mears is an excellent author. She makes quality stories.
That sounds like an interesting story. I like your analogy of The King and I in space, essentially. Because actually I did enjoy The King and I, the original version. That should be, and of course I picture Yul Brynner playing the part in the book, so can't get away from that.
There you go.
I haven't been able to read as much as I would like lately, so I'm kind of going to go back a little bit further to, and I kind of briefly touched base on it, but Game of Thrones.
Okay.
When the series first came out, I knew virtually nothing about it. I decided to go ahead and pick up the books and start reading them because I like having the contrast of the information in the book as well as the series itself. And once again, just like Hollywood loves to do, things are changed here and there, modified for various reasons. Maybe the writer had an all-night binge. I don't know, but there's definitely differences. But to be honest with you, I do enjoy both the series as well as the books themselves. And at some point in time, and I think it was book 3, if I remember correctly, I had to stop reading because the series was kind of spoiling it for me. And so I stopped reading, and now I'm waiting for the next series to pick up, and then I'll go back to reading again and pick up the little bits and pieces that the television series either changed or completely left out. But for anybody who is a fantasy fan, George R.R. Martin's Game of Thrones series, I believe there's 5 currently and there's a 6 coming up. It does take a little bit of patience to read, and the reason I say that is because he's extremely descriptive. He doesn't spare the description anywhere, whether it's the sex scenes or the gory scenes. You know, he's got it all in there, even down to you know, how somebody eats a grape. You know, so it's pretty amazing. There is quite a bit. It's pretty heavy reading, but I thoroughly enjoyed them. And of course, what's not to love about you know, dragons being in a story, especially with Daenerys being the dragon queen, the Khaleesi. The series does play that off pretty well, and I gotta say Emilia Clarke does a fantastic job. It's one of those things where I want to see more of the series only because I want to see if they're maintaining the same direction and they're not, you know, cutting and chopping. I know they've switched things around quite a bit, but I thoroughly, even if you don't want to see the series, I would strongly recommend Game of Thrones, the books to read.
Yeah, I still have the first book. I haven't gotten into it yet, and because I'm usually at war with Comcast, we don't get Game of Thrones. Imagine it might be on Netflix in the future, but
it's possible. They do have the series for sale, of course. You buy the first, I believe all 3 of them out, or 3, all 3 series are out right now. So
I noticed that they've had a lot of other series up, the Borgias, the Tudors. I kind of viewed this in the same light, but now after hearing you talk about it, I guess I'm a little more interested in actual bumping the book up into my list a little further than it is right now. Actually, it's not in my list at all. It's just sitting on my shelf staring me in the face.
That's the problem with it, you know, with avid readers. There's so many that we want to read, and I learned a long time ago not to read books at the same time, 2 different books, 3 different books. There was one point I was actually reading 5 different books at the same time, and I just, my head was about ready to explode. So I just, I couldn't do that anymore. Okay, and that brings us to the movie of the week. Star Crash.
More meaning in that title than probably was intended by the people who made it. But there's lots of stars crashing in this thing. Carolyn Monroe, the actress who was in The Spy Who Loved Me, opposite James Bond, was in it. I'm sure she really could do without this being on her IMDb. But Marjo Gortner, that was kind of ridiculous. This preacher guy who's been billed as Miracle Child Preacher goes on to be a rock star and in stars in movies. Like, somebody really got on the wrong side of a big bag of peyote and said that he could be in this role and do whatever. So, and he did. So the movie's also graced with Peter Cushing and David Hasselhoff playing Prince Simon.
I think that's probably what started getting him drinking.
Yeah, the pre-rehab.
Exactly.
I was having a little fun with it, with the light bright star opera, space opera scenes, where they're cruising along and, there's a light bright with a bunch of multicolored bulbs behind a black curtain, and that's our stars. But, you know, his eyes flash, he throws this thing up that turns into a lightsaber, let's say, stealing.
Stealing? No, not stealing.
So there's two robots in the end of this thing. They're supposed to be guardians, and it was almost like I was watching one of those 1960s Hercules movies where or Army of Darkness, where the stop-action skeleton comes up and has a sword and starts going at it. It was really 2 hours I'm never going to spend on that again. But.
You know, I have to say that with all its cheesiness, it's one of those B-movies that I actually like to watch. And I think it has kind of a nostalgic thing for me because Carolyn Monroe was... I had a huge crush on that girl. I'm sorry.
Oh,
but
I could see that.
Yeah, I watched her. Wardrobe must have loved them for all the cost-cutting there. So, but yeah, she was in Spy Who Loved Me, and she was in Sinbad, one of the Sinbad movies. She did all sorts of stuff around that time period. And I definitely had a crush on her, a star crush.
So, well, I think the timing on it was right after Star Wars and maybe just before The Empire Strikes Back.
Yeah, it fell right into, like I said, there was a whole bunch of movies they came out with that just really, I mean, Star Wars and I think Star Trek was kind of the Kickstarter, but Star Wars, you know, just, I mean, that was it. It was the launch pad. For everything sci-fi, and people just went ape. Because Star Crash was made around 1978, I mean, year after Star Wars came out. It was one of those things where, like I said, there were so many fantasy and sci-fi and things that just cropped up right and left. You know, most of them weren't very good. Some of them were pretty cool, but it definitely showed its age and its budget, for sure. There was another one called Laser Blast. Horrible movie. The guy that was slowly changing into an alien because he had to wear this necklace in order to use this laser blast gun that fell from the sky, and then he looked more like an ape walking around than he did an alien. But So, but you know, leading from these lovely B movies, which we all love to hate and still watch anyways, especially if we are on that little peyote kick, you know, it's the only thing you can watch. But and I'm not talking from experience or anything, I'm just saying. I think it's easy entertainment because we get a good laugh out of it. Everybody kind of looks at it the same. And I like I said, I get more of a nostalgic look at it just because of the stars that were there. You know, it's that whole thing of, oh my God, what were you people thinking? And then looking back at Carolyn Monroe and going, oh yeah. Yeah, that was worth waking up in the morning for. So.
Oh, we could do a whole episode about the roles I should have been talked out of.
Yeah, but you know that. Yes, exactly. That brings us into our fantasy faux pas. There's definitely been a share of B movies in the fantasy genre as well. Look at the movie Legend with Tom Cruise. Now, I do have to admit, the cinematography, some of the special effects, the sets they use, some of them were fantastic.
Yeah, that was definitely in a different class, although the script writing and the acting, yeah. Continue.
Yeah, another another one of those, you know, movies that you're just kind of like, you could have had it, but you missed. Ever so slightly, they just didn't quite get it. So, yeah. And
a unicorn.
But wait, there's more. Look, it's a unicorn. Yeah, that was probably the best part about it. I don't know, Tom Cruise in a fantasy movie? No.
I think that was his one venture there, and that is... I'm not going to go look up his IMDb, but I think he has been properly averse to doing anything again like that.
It's very possible. I think he's tried to steer very clear of anything fantasy, although he was in a science fiction movie.
Yeah, he's
movie.
Been in a few of those.
And, it was one of the more recent ones. And
Oblivion.
Oblivion, that's it. Thank you. My mind just farted again. Excuse me while I have a...
Yeah, he's on a sci-fi track now with Oblivion last year and Edge of Tomorrow opening this June. And let's see. He did one of those Philip K. Dick stories we were talking about, Minority Report.
Right, yeah. They had a good idea. They had, obviously, the budget because, like I said, the cinematography and the sets and even some of the special effects for that time period, this was around 1985, were fantastic. You definitely felt in a, for lack of a better term, fairy world. You know, it was amazing. But they definitely missed the mark with the writing and the actors and the acting. So, again, I can't completely blame actors because they have to take what's there in the writing and deal with it. So, but that one was definitely a miss when it came to fantasy movies. And we talked last episode about how certain novels and other things came up with the basis for all other books that came after it, set the flavor, set the line. And I think that at this point in time, the Lord of the Rings movies, the way they were done, have kind of made the base overall to where people now have to go above and beyond that to compete. All the things that came before that, I mean, there was some good, there was some bad, but it definitely doesn't match the level of what we now see in the Lord of the Rings and The Hobbit.
And I would go with why those keep getting made, because they've actually had a following. I'm not even sure what Legend was based on or if it was just a script that got written to make a fantasy movie that Tom Cruise and...
Well, this one was done by Ridley Scott. I think that was an original. I don't think that was based on an original novel. At least if it was, it was very loosely based on a novel. Because Ridley Scott has written just an amazing amount of movies. And I think he even did television. It was one of those things that it didn't... I don't remember ever saying, you know, based on a novel or anything of that nature. And once again, if somebody did write his novel, well, there you go. It's something that probably didn't follow the novel anywhere near as close as it should have.
Yeah. They've since, you know, done much better work, independent fantasy work, like Willow was an excellent fantasy, I felt. Legend was just another feather in Tom Cruise's IMDb, as far as I'm concerned. I can just look at it that way. I don't know if Tim Curry's drinking increased because of that movie, but I suppose, you know, the roles Tim Curry was taking at that time, he probably just felt that was in the background noise.
But, you know, again, it's one of those movies that I don't mind watching just for the sheer... it actually did win some awards for makeup and costume design as well as the visual effects. And like I said, it missed the mark when it came to the acting and whatnot, but it is fun to watch visually. I think that it's still worth watching, in my opinion. It just doesn't rank high on the list of very well-done movies.
I agree. And echoes follow.
I agree.
There you go.
And I have just one more thing to say about that, and I think if they had put Carolyn Monroe in that movie, it would have been a heck of a lot better. Exactly.
Veils, bikini, so, and high heels. Cue porno music.
Okay. Well, I think we've pretty much reached the end of our segments here. Now it's time for our plug-its, or should we say plug-ins? Is it plug-ins or plug-outs? Go ahead and plug your stuff there, Angus.
Well, as I said before, I'm a creator of science fiction. When I'm not consuming it, my particular creation is the Next You Universe, and the website is nextyouuniverse.com. Share the U. I'm in the process of putting my back catalog into audiobooks. I am streaming those on angushday.podbean.com. So far, I'm making them free. They're just podcast episodes. You can put in a playlist and let them rip on your iPod or player of choice as MP3s. I have 6 works up, Legacy of Daddy. You can look at my website under the books. The latest one is Minus the Conscience.
Who's your daddy?
Who's your daddy? And let's see, there's Next You Interstellar, LLC, Having Nice Things. They're all dystopian novels. There's comedy. There's a lot of heat, as in sexual. And there's...
We can't say that on the air, though.
No, we can't do that on the air. We can...
No, we can't.
The novels are written in a way that each one can stand on its own, or you can enrich your understanding of the Next You Universe by starting from Legacy of Daddy and working your way through.
Cool. And I have to also point out that they are well-written, fun to read. The time goes by fast when you're reading it. Your detail is amazing. And some of the characters, I want to really just, slap across the face.
As long as it's the characters, not the author, that could be off the edge.
No, only if you ask me to. Well, never mind, we won't talk about that. Anyway, so, yes, I do. I heartily recommend the series, and I'm still working my way into your most recent book, so...
That is a doorstopper, isn't it?
I should have...
That is a doorstopper, isn't it?
Doorstopper?
Yeah,
yes, it is.
Sorry about that. I just had to make a big one.
Make a big one. That's too much. I don't want to know. And my book is Blood and Bane, The Dragon Sage Chronicles. It is the first in a new series. I am currently working on a book that is actually a side story from the series, and the series will continue after this book. It is available on Amazon.com, both in Kindle and print format, as well as on Smashwords. Again, that's Blood and Bane, The Dragon Sage Chronicles. Like I said, I'm still working on more stuff, so I'm falling way behind Angus here, and I feel inadequate next to you, sir.
No need for that. One thing I'll say about CJ's work is I've only seen the Kindle version of it, but I've seen his trailers, and I know how much artwork, because CJ's more talented on a visual perspective than I am. So he's doing a lot of artwork that goes along with all this fantastic fantasy that he's packaging into the Dragon Chronicles. Reading Blood and Bane brought me back to reading fantasy. I was pretty much off fantasy for 30 years and read his, and now I'm consuming regular fantasy, although I have to dilute it with my Blood Life line of space opera.
Well, thank you for that. I appreciate that.
There you go.
Yep. So we got plenty of other material to read and, of course, this show to listen to. If you just finished listening to our show, I hope you enjoyed it. If you have any questions, any ideas for topics that you'd like to hear us talk about, please leave a comment at our website of dragonsandstarships.wordpress.com. And you can contact us there. Our episodes are also posted on Podbean, so you can find us on Podbean. But, yes, don't hesitate to contact us. And we're also on Facebook. Just look up Angus or myself, CJ. give us a shout. We'd like to hear from you, and we definitely hope you're enjoying the shows.
One thing I did miss in my plug was if you would like to follow my reviews, one place that will always have them is angus48.wordpress.com.
Yes, and to keep in mind, Angus works very hard at doing as many book reviews as he can. As authors, really like to get reviews. Yes, we can't please everybody. We understand that, but please take the time to review if you do read our books, especially if you enjoyed the show. Please let us know.
Anything else, Angus? I agree with everything you say, and I endorse this platform.
Okay, you earned your paycheck for the week.
Thanks. Off to the liquor store.
Thanks. Off to the liquor store, yep. Hey, it is almost St. Patty's Day.
Top of the morning, where's me gold?
All right, take care, everyone. Thank you very much, and we'll see you next time.